see if we're on. We are on. Trevor was telling me that he something messed up and he didn't record the last class. I told him he was going to have to come in here and recreate it. We'd have to figure out some audience noise or something. Maybe I should just sit in the audience and pepper him with questions. I hope you had a chance to look at the Proverbs. We our approach to this one will be a little different. It's a little different discussing the wisdom literature, particularly this one, because there's not really a story. In Job, we had a story. This one is more of a collection of sayings. And as you come in, I've got sheets for Wednesday sitting there in the chair. And I made a lot of little notes on my lesson sheet to go over in very small writing. But unfortunately, I didn't bring my reading glasses. So if I get it out too far, I can't see it. If I get it up this way, I can't see it. So. Yes, anybody need lesson 19? What power are they? Two's better. Oh. I'm not going to ask how old you are. Wow, that really helps. I can say it better than I could when I wrote it. All right. Okay. Anyway, if you were to... is this going to mess you up because you can't see? If you were... Well, that's probably true. Probably in more ways than one. All right, I got distracted. Lesson 19. I'm sorry. I couldn't see it. Okay. If you were to give a definition of a proverb, what would you say?
Wise saying.
Wise saying, okay. Anybody else?
Lessons for life.
Anything else?
A truism.
A truism, okay. We're kind of hitting on the same thing. If I were to make it more specific and say the biblical proverbs, what would you add to it?
Fire.
Okay, inspired. God inspired these men to say these things, or He inspired them to collect them all together. In terms of the truism, the principle, the factual nature of it, what else did the book of Proverbs have with it?
Spiritual direction.
Basically, they have the underlying principle that fear of God is the best way to go in life, right? I mean, that's the underlying principle. And if you'll open your Bibles to the book of Proverbs, the very first beginning of it, you'll see the purpose of Proverbs in the very beginning. Now, as we've got in our lesson sheet, it's divided up and we can kind of evenly divide it into five different sections. The first nine deal with a father. It's almost like a father instructing his son, "Listen to me, son." And he's talking about things that he's learned. He's trying to keep his son from doing things that he knows are going to be detrimental to him. And if you look at the very beginning, it says here, find my notes. Look at what it says at the very beginning with verse 2. It's to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of the understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive. I think that's an interesting point to remember. These are written for the person who needs additional help or needs instruction. And we all need that, right, to a degree. I think there are some more than others. In terms of our station in life, when do we usually need more instruction? When you're young. And that's really there's really a lot of this that's talked about in terms of youth, usefulness. And I think even our own lives, we can look back at our own lives and realize we were hopefully a lot less wise as youths than we are now. Hopefully we've matured and the lessons of life, if nothing else, have taught us some of these things. In addition to, more importantly, the Word of God. And it says, a wise man will hear and increase in learning. A man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. What does the Bible say in the book of James with respect to wisdom? Yeah. The book of James teaches us to ask God for wisdom. And He gives it what? Abundantly, freely. All we have to do is ask for it. But to those who need wisdom, it says those who need additional wisdom, ask God for it. And that's something I've tried to tell my son, I've tried to do myself. to ask God for these things, and God will give them to us. Look at verse 7, and I think this hits at one of the underlying principles of the entire book. What does it say? Yeah, the beginning of knowledge, even the start of understanding anything, is to have the fear of the Lord as your root principle. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Exactly. Now, as we start reading this book, and we see my son, and you see it already in verse 8, hear your father's instruction. Don't forsake the teaching, your mother's teaching. And we'll see a little later on, as you read the book, how is wisdom described? What is it made into? It's personified as a what? A woman. Come into me. Those of you who are naive, and it doesn't mean it in a perverted way, but it's like, come into me. Come call upon me. Come visit me. I'm just like as if she's at the street corner crying out, come see me. And yet people refuse to do that. And that's the point of this book. He personifies wisdom in such a way. I read someone when I was studying this. How many chapters are there in this book? 31. In many months of the year, how many days are there? 31. Would it do us all well? And I'm not saying we should do this repeatedly every day of the year, every month of the year. But take out a couple of months out of the year and just devote one chapter a day to reading the Proverbs. It will help us not only in our personal lives with our relationships. It will help us in our business dealings and our friendships. Just the entire spectrum of life, I believe, is covered in these passages. So that's something to think about when you're... Just something to think about doing. I think I may try to do that. Maybe start of the month of December and just start reading one chapter a day. Hopefully in addition to our other studies that we do. And I think I mentioned earlier, the book is really addressed with a simple-minded person. Right? I don't think you have to be a genius to figure most of these out. They're general statements of truth. Now, when you think about a general statement of truth, does that mean there are no exceptions? No, I think we can see some proverbs that have some exceptions to them. I think they have to be taken with the idea of a practicality to them, an understanding that this is generally how the way things go. There's a passage that says, if you beat your child with a rod, he won't die. Well, within limits, that's true. But if you take a rod and beat him long enough, hard enough, you know, you can kill him. So try to understand what the idea behind the proverb is. It's to speak a general statement of truth. All right. Any other comments that any of you have before we start delving into some of the specific topics that we've picked out, that I picked out?
One way of thinking of the Proverbs and a good way to use them is how the world would be able to learn them and apply them.
Exactly. And we do live in an ungodly world. And we live in a world where people don't mind cheating you, taking advantage of you, cheating the government, indulging in all sorts of things that we consider to be pleasurable. And that's the kind of world we live in. And apparently that's the kind of world they live in too. You know, people in general, even though we're in a technological age where we're very advanced in terms of technology, are we really any different? You know, what are the kind of things people are pursuing? They're pursuing money. A lot of them are trying to get out of work. A lot of them are involving themselves in intoxicating beverages, worldliness, greed, and all those subjects are addressed in this book. All of those subjects are addressed. Parenting, things, how to raise your children. And we'll talk about that as we get a little further on. Let's go ahead and delve into... And I hope that you didn't limit yourself to the passages that I have listed, because I didn't even scratch the hem of the garment, probably in some cases, concerning how many different types of passages there would be. So let's talk about it. I kind of lump poverty, wealth, industriousness, and laziness into one heading. You know, we're limited in time. We'll have this class and we'll have the next class, and we'll study some of these various subjects. I think it's good to impart these to the kids as you're teaching. I mean, they need to understand you're going to be expected to work. If you lay in bed and sleep all day, you probably, if you make a habit of that, you're probably not going to come to much. And that's really the point that's being made. So, why are some of the various reasons that people are poor, according to Proverbs? What did you come up with? All right, laziness. Okay, that's definitely talked about, the sluggard. What else? It's particularly laziness, and I had the sluggard himself. Proverbs 22 and verse 13. It says that the sluggard says, there's a lion in the streets. What does that mean? What is he saying?
Can't go.
Yeah, I can't go. I'm not going to go out there. There's a lion that's going to get me. And he's using that as an excuse to get out of work. I have seen people like this. If you work with people like this, they're not saying there's a lion in the street, but people who invent ways to get out of work. Have you seen that? I've seen people who, I think, spend almost as much effort trying to get out of work than they would if they just go ahead and do the work. If you work out in the world, you'll see people like that. Even in professional jobs, people who devote themselves somehow, some way to getting a degree, now don't want to work once they have it. But that's the case.
People have an individual lion.
Huh?
People have their individual lions.
Yes, okay, it's a good point. They have their own lions out in the streets, symbolically speaking. What else did you come up with?
Lack of preparation.
All right, lack of preparation. Which chapter are you in? Exactly. Those that refuse instruction. Who don't want to be taught anything? What else do you have? Okay, I've definitely got that one. That's in several of them. Pursuing worthless things. Things that don't really value anything anyway. They spend all their time pursuing something that really won't amount to anything. And that thing, those kind of things could be legitimate types of pursuits. I've seen people who spend all their time spending in athletics, things like that. That really, in the greater scheme of things, not going to amount to much in terms of our own livelihoods. Not that there's anything wrong within the limit to doing that kind of thing. What else? And I've got that, and I intended for you to look at that. Chapter 30, verse 14, afflicted by evil people. 22:16, those who oppress the poor. Another one that I have is that one that one who just won't work himself, doesn't plow, doesn't work. What about one who wants to sleep? You see that throughout. One who loves sleep. And I've got... let's read that. I actually had that down as a note to read. Why don't you read that one, Buford? 30 through 34, chapter 24.
I went by the field of the lazy man and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding. And there it was, all overgrown with thorns and serpents and stone wall was broken down. I thought I had considered it well. I looked on it and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, and the rest. Probably come like a power.
So he was able to draw a conclusion based on the way the man's house and property looked. He had not devoted himself to taking care of it. Do you see that today as you drive around? Absolutely you do. I've seen places, I can think of a place out on 251 that I knew growing up, back the family, the man and woman that lived there were Christians. She's still alive actually, she's very elderly now. Well kept place, I've been in that home several times, they took care of it. I guess they sold it to someone, and it is the biggest trash heap you have ever seen in your life. It is unbelievable. In fact, I think I even saw a news story one day about it in the one of the television stations, because one of the neighbors was trying to get the county to do something about it. And I don't think the county has a lot of control outside of the city limit. But it's just because people just don't make the effort to take care of themselves. And what does that lesson to us? People are watching us. People are seeing us. We are sending a message about ourselves by the way our property is taken care of. Don't let laziness keep us from taking care of things. Any other thing that you had there? I think I've got one who loves pleasure, wine and oil. That's from verse 21:17. These are various reasons why people are poor. I think we understand also, and let me say this, there are some people who are poor not of their own doing. There are some who work hard and still are poor. And that's just a lot of life that happens sometimes. There are some who don't work hard that wind up being very rich just by luck. And that happens.
Or inheritance.
Huh?
Or inheritance,
yeah, exactly. I had lack of desire. And someone may have already mentioned that. Chapter 23, verse 21. Heavy drinking and gluttony, drowsiness, that will lead to poverty as well. What are some of the consequences of laziness? And so this kind of blends into question one, but there's a couple of more things that we might be able to draw from that. What did you have? Okay, they lose their reputation. I think I've got that one down.
And they become poor.
We already talked about that. I've got from verse chapter 18, verse 9, considered as one who destroys. Chapter 10, verse 26, they are rejected or disliked by others. I believe that's the one that talks about it's like smoke to the eyes. How do you like having smoke in your eyes? No, that burns our eyes. It irritates us. Well, one who is lazy is considered that way. You ever had people who are maybe a person that's going to be put on a project with you? And here they're coming. They're going to cause more trouble. They're not going to help at all. They're not going to be a benefit to you. You wish they weren't even involved because of the reputation they have. Hopefully none of us are like this. If we are, let's change. Let's not be that way. That's the point that's being made. You know, learn from this is the point. Teach your children not to be that way. Be one who works. Be one who's looked upon, wow, here he comes. He's going to be a big help. We can use him or her. I've got verse chapter 26 and verse 16. This is one who becomes wise in his own eyes. That's a consequence. Okay? Chapter 15, verse 19. His pathway will be made painful. I believe it uses the term, will be like, there'll be thistles on his pathway. I'm trying. These are good glasses, Mike. Anything else you had? I had chapter 12, verse 24. They'll be put to forced labor. Again, general statements of truth. I'm glad you brought that up. That's one I probably should have put in the chapter, in the passage list. Go to the ant, you sluggard. You know, all of us have had to deal with ants. A friend of mine at work's having to deal with them in his house. He can't get rid of them. That's how industrious they are. If you leave some food out, and they're anywhere in, I guess, odor shot of it, they'll find it. And they'll assemble themselves, they'll have a path, and they're very organized in what they do, going back to their nest. And, you know, they work. Simple creatures like that. Okay. Okay, honor the Lord with your possessions. That kind of blends into the next one, too, as well. But a person who's lazy just won't be able to honor the Lord because they won't be able to accumulate possessions. There's nothing wrong in and of themselves, in and of itself, to have possessions. In fact, you know, sometimes we can swing too far one way as we can the other. It's like, well, we know we should not put our emphasis on being rich or trying to be rich. But the Bible does teach us to be industrious and to work hard and see the benefits from that. What are the responsibilities towards those who have the means to help? Exactly. And that principle is borne out in several of the passages. I think I may have one passage in there that didn't fit. I'm not sure what I was thinking there. But if he shuts his ear, he will cry himself and not be answered. I think that was what Angela was just talking about in chapter 21:13. Verse 17 of chapter 19, if we are gracious to the poor, it's the same as if we lend to the Lord. Did you think of a New Testament passage that fits that? That Jesus said? Yeah, you've done it to me. And that same principle is borne out here in chapter 19, verse 17. Anything else that you have there? I think Wayne mentioned something that just fit in as well. Does wealth guarantee happiness? And I said enduring happiness or honor or reputation and success. So what did you put down there of some of these various passages? I got notes all over mine, and like I said, I'm having a hard time reading. How about it? Exactly. There might be some temporary happiness that results from having wealth, right? We might be able to buy a new car or buy some possession or buy a nice house. How long is that going to last? As long as we keep it, or as long as it's maybe not even that long. It might burn down. Everything we have may burn down. We're certainly not going to take it with us after we pass away. It's going to be left to someone else. The book of Ecclesiastes will talk about that. But somebody else is going to take that. So these things aren't going to be enduring. It'll fly away, as Joy has pointed out. That's right. And you think about some of the wealthy people that we know in our day and age. Morally speaking, there's nothing to them. They don't have a good name. They have a name for being rich and being famous. But in terms of who they are there's no substance to them. And again, I'm thinking of the Donald Trumps and people like that. Oh, there's a lot of attention put on him. He's really somebody. Well, he is in the ways of the world. But from a spiritual standpoint, is he? You know, Donald Trump and Jay Leno, and I used to think about Johnny Carson standing before God. One day, everybody is going to stand before God in judgment. They're going to be just like everybody else. Barack Obama will do it. Bill Clinton will do it. We will do it. And then what's going to be important? Yeah. Well, from a worldly standpoint, yeah. Yeah. We're all going to stand. And the things that we have, the power that we may acquire now. Again, I'm not saying it's wrong to be president. But let's keep in mind, he's going to stand as a man just like we will before God. And, well, anyway. It says it's better to be poor with integrity than to be considered rich. Or, this is from chapter 28 and verse 6. Excuse me. It's better to be poor with integrity than to be crooked and rich. It's better to be poor. You know, something I've tried to tell my son, going to school, taking him to school sometime. I'm off every other Friday, and sometimes I'll see, you know, the garbage truck runs about that time. And that's usually not considered to be one of the better professions to have, is it? To work on a garbage. But I've tried to tell him, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. They're out working. They are working. It's a whole lot better to do something like that, even if it's picking up garbage, than it is to be sitting at home doing nothing. You know, that's an honorable job, in my opinion. They're working. They're doing their jobs. And what if somebody didn't do that?
Better be doing that than it is to be...
Exactly. Absolutely. In fact, that's the very point of that verse. Much better. I would rather them do something like that and be honest and be on Wall Street and a millionaire but be crooked. Yeah, exactly. And that'll get on one of our next subjects, won't it? That blends right in. Any other comment you want to make with regard to poverty, wealth, industrious, or laziness? Good point. And where is our basis of integrity? It's with God. God's Word, the principles that God gives us. Any other comment? Okay, I've got that one down as well. It's good. It's better to have a good name, a good reputation. Wayne? I'm glad you pointed that out. Do not weary yourself to gain wealth, as my version says. Cease from your consideration of it. And as Joy's already pointed out, when you set your eyes on it, it's gone. For wealth makes itself wings like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. And there's so many people who are wearying themselves, putting all of their time and energy, spending time away from their families in order to be rich. And what good is it going to be? It's going to fly away. That's a good thing to think about. Very good. All right, let's move on to the next subject. The dangers of intoxicating beverages are talked about in the book of Proverbs. And I've got three questions here. You can bring up any other amount of stuff you want to bring up. I think I've got most of the passages that deal with it. I may have missed one or two, but I think this is pretty much most of them. The physical effects of drinking and being drunk, what are they? Okay? Violence? Okay? Impaired judgment? Okay? All right, I heard two things at once and didn't hear either one. Go ahead.
Reasoning.
Okay, your logic, your reasoning. Okay. Somebody was telling me, somebody at work the other day, one of their relatives, that she had something bad happen in her life. She turned to alcohol and she died. She drank herself to death, basically. Let's turn over to the book of chapter 23. I've got the wounds without cause, redness of eyes, being struck but not even being aware of it, unconsciousness. It says, verse 29, who has woe, who has sorrows, who has contentions, who has complaining, who has wounds without cause, who has redness of eyes, those who linger long over wine, those who go to taste mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. At last it bites like a serpent, it stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things, your mind will utter perverse things. And you will be like one who lies down in the middle of the sea, or like one who lies down on the top of a mast. They struck me, but I did not become ill. They beat me, but I did not know it. When shall I awake? I will seek another drink. Pretty sad state, isn't it? What are some of the emotional effects? Makes one a brawler, woe, sorrow, contentiousness, complaining, seeing strange things, that could be a physical effect as well. Uttering perverse things, forgetting, not even being aware of what happened to you. Does that pretty much happen with drunkenness? We see that all the time, don't we? I'll tell you a personal story. This passage that we just read. I had a business trip to New York City one time with some coworkers, and we all went out to eat. We went to a restaurant. And they ordered alcohol with theirs. I didn't. And one of them ordered a bottle of wine. And I don't know what you think about that. I was kind of with them. And some people may have thought, well, I should have got up. But I had my meal with them there. And they ordered a bottle of wine. And they were pouring it out. Of course, I didn't have any. I want to make that abundantly clear. But I will tell you this. They poured that out. And I remember looking at this, and I hope you don't think badly of me for telling you this, but I have to admit, for one of the few times in my life, it did look like it would taste good. It was red in that glass, and you think about how it looks as it swished, and I don't remember all the things that happened and what I was all thinking. And one of them made the comment, repeatedly, if my memory is correct, how smooth it was. How smooth. How can a drink be smooth? I don't quite understand it, but I found myself at that point kind of wondering what that would be like. Again, I didn't. I'm glad I didn't. I can't tell you how many times I've thought about this particular passage since then. And that's the very word that lady, it was one lady that was with us, the rest of us were men. She kept using that term, if my memory is correct. How smooth this is. How smooth it is. Yeah.
I've always thought about the fear.
They make it look good. They want you to buy it. And they want you to think about funniness and frolic and having a good time. I think that's why they make these stupid commercials. And some of them are funny. Some of them aren't fit to see, but some of them can be quite entertaining from the standpoint of just a comic standpoint. But why do they do that? Again, I try to tell my children that. Well, my oldest particularly, youngest is still, you know, learning, but they make those commercials for a reason. They want you to think about fun and happiness. But what is it really like?
Well, if they tell the truth about it,
nobody would buy it. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. That's the message they don't want you to hear. And they'll talk about responsibility and drink wisely. I think they want you buying as much of that stuff as they can sell to you. Anyway. Yeah. Anyway, I hope you don't think poorly of me for telling you that. My point is, even at 40-something years old, you can still be tempted by this kind of thing. And it's not just young people who can be tempted. Again, I'm glad I didn't fool with it. I never even got close to fooling with it. But I could see how somebody could be sucked into that. Anyway, have I said too much? I hope not. Yeah. Huh? Yeah, but I hope you don't mind a personal example, but I just to say that because any of us can fall into that if we're not careful. You know, what if any of us get in a situation and decide, okay, let's try it? You know, what's the harm?
Sometimes people try to embarrass you into participating with a good name.
What do we just talk about with a good name? You know, what do you think they think about you now looking back? I think they probably have a large degree of respect for you taking that position. And our children will, if they grow up and stay away from that stuff, they'll look back at 40-something and be glad they didn't fool with it too. Charles, do you have a comment?
I was just going to say, oftentimes folks read 29.5 emphasize that it's talking about overuse and intoxication, but you know the verses that you focus on 31 and 32, make it clear that the substance itself is being condemned. God says, don't drink too much of it. That's not what he said. He said in verse 29, don't look at it. Don't look at it as if it's appealing. Don't do that. Certainly, excess is condemned, but also moderation is condemned. And then it's made analogous to a poison in verse 30. That would be akin to saying a little bit of poison is okay.
Yeah. Don't be.
The Bible uses wine to refer to two different substances. The alcoholic one is.
You know, don't be fooled by this, I think is one point it's been making. It looks great. And it can. But it's not. Charles? Yeah. And I've never really experienced a lot of pressure in terms of my professional life. Usually that people respect that and they don't even question it. They probably assume I had a problem with it in the past, which is not the case at all. But that's probably what a lot of them assume. Because some people who did have a problem with it won't go back to it, to their credit. To their credit. Anyway. Charles, do you have a comment?
Years ago, when I was coming in, you went to the Von Braun community people. What's noticeable is in the survey, and I've already indicated that we did not.
And that's good. And that's a good story. You know, usually I found that people will respect you. And I found, too, there's quite a few people I work with that don't drink. We'll go to events and, you know, they're having tea like I am. They're not, they don't care for it either. So, you know, you're not by yourself. All right, good comments. We got to talk about parents and children. We don't have a lot of time to do it. What does the Bible teach regarding, and let me say the financial effects of experience for those who drink, we've already kind of talked about it. They'll become to poverty. They won't become rich. Again, general statements of truth. All right, parents and children, in the midst of a world who nowadays teaches it's terrible to spank your child physically, what does the Bible have to say about it? Huh? It will drive through. The foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, right? But the rod of correction will drive it from him. Rod and reproof give wisdom. But a child left to himself does what? Brings his mother to shame. Exactly. It says, do not hold back the rod from your child. Turn over to chapter 23. We'll just kind of... We'll talk about verse 13 and 14. And I mentioned this earlier. Don't hold back discipline from the child, though you strike him with a rod, he will not die. You shall strike him with a rod and rescue his soul from Sheol. And we talked about in verse 15 of chapter 22, the rod of correction will remove foolishness. So, the Bible kind of makes it clear that physical, corporal punishment is a part of the discipline we need to apply to our children. Now, I don't think that the word discipline... And I think the book points this out. We shouldn't limit our idea of discipline to be just a physical form of punishment. There are other forms of punishment that are effective. Some, in some children's cases, I think might be more effective than the physical. Some of them, I think, I wonder if I'm hitting hard enough sometime on one of them. You know, I was like, do you feel this? So the Bible makes it clear, even though the world today teaches just the opposite, and look what our world's becoming. We've got generations of kids who haven't been spanked, and we're seeing the results.
Scott, a couple of verses about the little word you used about the rod and the cripple. It uses the word, verse 17, praise thy soul. Yea, he shall give the light of thy soul. So there is hope, discipline, other than
yeah. Yeah, and the Bible, I believe, and the book points that out. Don't think of it as just corporal punishment. Think of it as more, I mean, that's definitely a part of it. You can't get around the idea of a rod. That is definitely corporal punishment. But there are other forms as well that are effective, Angel. Train them up, exactly.
In 13:24, whoever spares God hates his son, which we don't love our children enough to bite them.
And the world's idea is if we love them, we won't do that. And yet the Bible idea is that if you love them, you will do that. What's the net result of disciplining our children? And we can go ahead and just answer. We're very short on time. Angela just pointed out really an answer there to our 10th question. If we withhold our rod, we hate our children. But if we apply it, if we apply discipline, that means we love them. The net result is that He will give you comfort. He will delight in your soul. I think that's already been mentioned. I think Jimmy mentioned that. You will rescue His soul from Sheol. And when He is old, He won't depart from it. Again, general statements of truth regarding discipline. How often should it be applied and when? Are we going to be able to correct them when they hit 16 and start then? Way gone at that point, isn't it? It has to start early and often. It has to be applied diligently. The word diligently is used in one of the passages. This is 13:24. Exactly. Yeah. Obviously, we're not going to wear them out when they're first born. There has to be some reason, and I know you weren't saying that. There's got to be a reasonable, practical understanding of what's appropriate. And we don't all draw that line at the same place. Some draw it, I think, too far the other way. Some may draw it almost too far one way as you can the other. What's the child's responsibility? To listen. Chapter 6 and verse 20. And I can't read my writing. Oh, the eye. I cannot read my writing. I know that it has to do with giving them a parent a stern look or having a bad eye towards their parents. The ravens will pluck it out. The eagles will eat it. Don't forsake the teaching of your parents. A fool rejects reproof. A wise son accepts his father's saying. A scoffer doesn't listen. Listen to your father. Don't despise your mother's teaching. Again, he's trying to teach this child, listen to me. I've lived. And that's hard for kids to understand sometimes, isn't it? And the Bible tells us that. But from what I have read, there is hope. And if we'll keep applying it normally, regularly, and consistently, and if we'll actually do it, they will turn out well. And I'm going to hold to that hope. No, I think I've got two pretty good ones so far. But...
I raised three sons, and two of them turned out well.
And it's a general statement of truth. He may come back at some point. You know, there's still hope for him. You know, those principles that you laid down, he may reflect on one day. You know, we have to do this. And if we don't do it, what's going to be the result? Most likely. You know, they are going to be lost if we don't do it. And that point is made here, and it's also made in the New Testament. The one that it's in the context of loving the child. Whom the Lord loves, He chastens. And it uses that example. I think I wrote that one down somewhere. So the point is made, if you love your child, apply the discipline. Apply the discipline. All right, I got questions. Hopefully you got those. We'll hit a few more subjects next week or next Wednesday. We may not hit them all. Thank you.